You there! Welcome to the first full episode of A Spoonful of Theatre!
I'm TJ, theatre practitioner, director and performer.
And I'm Sam Sam, a teacher of language, literature and self-proclaimed show business lovey.
This is our podcast where we spill the tea on all things Singapore theatre.
It's tea time! And rather fittingly, today's episode is entitled Break a Leg.
Literally.
Uh-oh, why like that, TJ?
Well, because our guest is the one and only Andrew Marco, who quite literally broke his leg during Little Shop of Horrors, and I had to learn the lead part in only 3 days and go on stage
Just a minute, just a minute. More on that later, dear listeners.
But for now, pop the kettle on.
Grab a Becky.
And let's add a spoonful of theatre to sweeten up your day.
Oh, we're here, love.
We are here. It's our first full episode, Sam.
First full episode. Marvellous.
I am excited. I have loved the last few days looking at everybody. We managed to get 2 episodes out already in our first month. And it's been so lovely, hasn't it? Just all the responses and everyone engaging with it. It's been wonderful.
It's not just our mothers listening. It's quite a few of you.
It's great. Thank you for everyone who wants to listen to us ramble on.
Yes, but you know, I know the messages that we've been receiving on Instagram, on TokTik and all the
All right, Uncle.
No, it's been and a really big thank you to you all. A lot of you have said you've wanted something like this. You want the tea of Singapore theatre. So thank you so much for your support. And of course, a big shout out to Zerat Media as well, who is hosting us doing this podcast. So a big thank you to you for helping us out with this. So yes, it's been fabulous.
It's been great. And you want the tea, and we have got the kettle on and it is boiling and we are ready to spill it for you. So we'll be going to all the shows, just like our Dear Evan Hansen Spill the Tea episode. We'll be seeing lots of shows over the next few months. So if you would like us to review a show, drop us a message and we will try and go view it. And also, we are going to be interviewing all the guests from Singapore Theatre. So we'd like to know who you want us to have a conversation with.
Yes.
And speaking of, today is our first conversation.
It is our first guest.
And our first guest is on the way. He's stuck in traffic. We've been receiving very, very interesting, voice messages from him on the way.
Different accents, which I'm going to ask him about. Yeah. It's a big question of mine
But it's going to be a very entertaining one. And I think for us, why are we doing these interviews? We don't just want those kind of very typical corporate interviews where, you know, we're saying all the right things. We want you guys to get to know the people. So I'm very lucky. I've met most of the people we're going to be interviewing and work with them. And you know, when you work with people, you talk in the changing rooms and in the rehearsal room and, you know, you get to know people on that level. And I think it's fine time that we got to know all of our fantastic Singapore professionals, actors, directors, costume designers, backstage, a little bit more personally. And that's our aim for these interviews, isn't it, Samson?
Yes, I completely agree. And for audience members, what we hope is that it makes them more accessible. Mm-hmm. It's not like Hollywood or where they're up on a pedestal and you can't touch them or speak to them or anything like that. As I've sort of been in your shadow meeting all these people, they're such wonderful, humble human beings. Mm-hmm. And they have stories to tell.
Yeah.
And our hope is that you want to hear those stories as well. And we cannot wait for us and our guests to share those stories.
Absolutely. And our first guest, I think I just looked, he's pulling up now. So we are going to get ready. And in a moment, dear listeners, we are coming back with our wonderful interview with the one and only Andrew Marco.
Stay tuned.
So, ladies and gentlemen, what a great introduction, because our guest is in the room with us. Sam, who is with us today?
Oh my God,
Two guesses.
My sides have been splitting from the moment he's walked into the door. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, and he's discovered the sound effects button. It is chaos, ladies and gentlemen, already.
Oh, dear Lord. Ladies and gentlemen. It's Andrew Marco.
Oh, hello, hello, hello.
Hello. How are you, dear?
I'm doing very well indeed. How are the both of you?
All right,
yes. We are good. But you know, I've got a bone to pick with you.
Oh, dear.
Breaking bones.
Well, breaking bones. Well, I just want to say it's not my fault that ever happened. Okay, it's because too many people tell me to break a leg. And then when it actually happens,
it manifested.
Well, it wasn't your fault to jump on a platform and do a split leap onto the ground.
Oh, she's not bitter, are you? Oh, you really are not bitter.
Like, I mean, you were so happy to do it. You were happy to. Okay, well, it's your dream role. And you kept saying that was your dream role. And look, a manifest, right?
You know what? I genuinely thank you. It was one of the best experiences. But at the same time, that was hell for 3 days to try and work out how to learn.
And any time that you have to deal with hell, I think the best thing to do is have a drink. And today, we've got Ginca, Peruvian distilled gin. Very small batch, handcrafted and distilled by Peru's first urban distillery, Berries Edition.
I'm going to have to put a sponsored link
are.
Oh, we've got ASMR. There we go.
Oh, that sounded wonderful.
Okay, so when we say it's a tea, today is a slightly stronger tea than usual.
Very strong tea indeed.
Okay, so Marco has brought us a lovely gin to have, and he's pouring it now. So as you're doing that, Marco, why don't you tell us what possessed you to jump off a platform and break your leg?
Well, to be honest, I was born, and then I was given this impression that I was cool, and then I could be cool. And to be fair, the whole week I had been doing it perfectly fine. You know, nothing ever went wrong. The final button of the song, I get up, I go, woo, boom, da-da-da-down, bam. Right, it was fine. It's fine. And then that one Saturday night, just everything just gave way.
But just to clarify, no one asked you to do
no
that.
No one asked me to do it, yeah.
Yes. Added in.
Yes. And that's why the insurance just wasn't in my favor. Otherwise, I would have single-handedly bankrupted Cynthia. I'm still very sorry for almost doing that.
Absolutely. When it happened, did your life flash before your eyes?
To be honest, it was one of those moments where, when I think back about it, I think that the trauma was just wild. Because the moment I landed, I felt a crack on my knee. I felt something go off, and I knew something bad had happened, because then I couldn't feel my toes. I couldn't move toes. I couldn't move my ankle. And I thought, oh my God, I'm dead. I'm dead for life. I'm never going to walk again. You know? And then I hobbled off stage. And I remember when I hobbled off stage, everyone who was watching just went, oh, what a funny guy. Comedy, classic Andrew.
Well, it's true. Show must go
show
on.
Show must go on, yes. But then as I hobbled off stage, I tapped TJ on the shoulder and I went, TJ, no.
I remember hearing was, as we were hobbling off stage and I'm behind you going, oh, he's done something. And then what I remember, because I was right next to you and you got into the wing and you just collapsed in front of me, right at my feet. And I looked down and I went, I'm Seymour. That was literally, and I stood there frozen for about 3 minutes. As everyone else came to do first aid, I was not helping you. I was stood absolutely paralyzed in shock, just looking down going, I'm Seymour.
I've got to memorize my lines now.
I was like, I'm Seymour. And then I remember telling, I was still in shock, and Natalie came over, and Natalie was like, oh, he'll be fine. He just needs to stretch it out. as you're laid there in utter pain. And I was like, no, Natalie, he's not coming back. And like, and as we're calling an ambulance, I'm like, yeah, you're not coming back. And then, the realization for us came in that we had to redo the show for Tuesday.
And bless you got yourself sorted, well, to a degree, you got yourself sorted. And then you came and watched the show.
And then I came and watched the show.
How did that feel?
It was. I felt like I just wanted to jump on stage. And it was the first time in my life ever watching a show that I'm actually in.
What a surreal experience.
Yeah, it's a strange feeling. I've never done that. I've never had an understudy go on. I've never done that.
Oh, that was a flex. Could you feel that? That was a flex then.
Well, to be fair, there's not usually understudies. We were very lucky.
so it was an incredible feeling. And I remember I went with Eugenia and her mom and her two sisters. Mm. And it was my first time meeting them. And it was supposed to be me performing on stage and going up to them going, oh, yeah, hi, I'm Andrew. but no, it was just me sat in the audience with them going, that should have been me. I could have been doing that, but I'm an idiot.
And are you all healed now?
It's about 85% of the way healed. I'm still not allowed to run or jump, but I'm allowed to walk fast. I'm allowed to do small, tiny pivots, but I can't spin yet.
Because you show your choreographers love you.
Oh, yeah. Gabby's having a wild time having to dumb everything down just for my leg.
Now then, Marco, darling.
Yes.
Where did it... Or, cheers, by the way.
Oh, cheers, yes,
cheers.
Yes,
we've got our drinks, exactly. Marcos. Yes. Thank you so much.
Here we go. Mm.
ASMR. Oh,
that's lovely botanicals, that.
Oh, wow. Oh. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful tea. Oh, beautiful tea.
Wow. Well done, Peru. Oh.
Wow.
Oh,
there we go.
Goodness. What am I in the middle of?
Marco, my darling, Marco. Yes. Where did it all begin?
I think I was 4 years old.
Oh, is that, yeah.
And I played a cow in
Milky White.
No, I missed it by just that much. No, it was a little school recital for Old MacDonald Had a Farm, and I was the cow.
Oh, wow.
And that was really it. But then, of course, through when I was in primary school and everything, I was in a lot of performance-based stuff. I was in a band. I played the tuba. I was also in the choir, which I hated because you had to sing like this all the time.
Very Sound of Music.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. And then when I went to secondary school, I remember I joined the rugby team and the drama club at the same time. And I went for a week's worth of rugby training, and I thought, no, I'm not doing that. Mm. I'm not running out in the sun. The drama club's got aircon. So I turned the other way, and I went, I'm gonna join the drama club. But of course, I had terrible stage fright when I was a little kid. Because I've always been big. I've always been really, really big since I was very young. So the crippling anxiety of going on stage and having everyone laugh at me was just too much for me. So I said, no, I am not going to perform. I am just going to be the backstage crew. So that's why I started out. Just started moving props, moving stuff around on stage. And already that was like, I would get nervous. I would start sweating, you know, moving a chair on stage. I'm like, oh, no, everyone's going to laugh at me. I can't do this. And then I had this teacher. She passed away a couple of years ago. Bless her soul. Her name's Sheila. Sheila Gregory. And she was my lit teacher and also the head of the drama club. Mm. And in lit class, for some reason, I was always a very strange kid. So we were doing a reading of Animal Farm.
Oh, brilliant.
And she was asking us to read out the book one by one. And when it came to me, I don't know what possessed me to do this, but I started reading it like this. And all the animals chorused all together. Four legs good, two legs bad. I started reading like that. And she went, what? Why? Okay. And so she said, "You can act. You can try acting. I think you'd be good at it." And I went, "Oh, I'm not gonna do that." But still, she forced me onto stage. She said, "I'm gonna give you a small role. You just try it out." And I did, and I loved it. I just fell in love with the kind of applause that I got. And I went, "Oh, I can do this." And then that rest is history. I just started performing since then.
There's many a story where the literature teacher is involved.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking of Patrick Stewart now.
Patrick Stewart button.
Have you read it? It's the best book I've read this year, Patrick Stewart's memoir.
Oh, no.
And he had a mentor in his school that basically set him, and they had, with Brian Blessed, no less, they had a little club. And yeah, it's the rest is history with that. I mean, we're teachers. It's nice to know that there can be an inspiration like that.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, like, I was exactly the same. My drama teacher was my absolute inspiration. Yeah. And I think, you know, when you have a good drama teacher or someone just that believes in you at that age, completely changes you, and that one spark can just make a huge difference going forward. So
absolutely.
Shout out to all the teachers. In fact, cheers to all the teachers.
Cheers to all the teachers.
Oh, yes, because you're teaching now as well.
I'm teaching as well,
yeah. How's that going?
Oh. I will say
you're inspiring the next Marco. That's what you're doing.
That's what I'm doing. I've got some one-on-one classes, which I love because it's just one-on-one, and the kids are sometimes pretty enthusiastic. But the group classes, I've got to deal with about 12 8-year-olds. That's one class. I've got another class of 12 9-year-olds. And then on one class, my group classes, I've got 2 14-year-olds. Who, in contrast to the other two classes, are quiet. They're just, like, getting them to speak is like trying to squeeze blood out of stone. It's just, they just don't speak at all. And the first two classes, they're just like, just absolute chaos. It takes me about 15 minutes to get them to sit in a circle and stay seated. So that can be a bit terrifying. But it's fun. It's fun. Honestly, I used to teach a few years ago, and then I stopped because I said, I've had enough of children. I can't do it. and then this year alone, my bank account said, well, maybe give that another shot. Because you hate it, but look around you, everyone hates their jobs. So, but you know what? Those people have money. So I said, oh, I've got to do that.
That does raise a very interesting question for the performer's world in Singapore. How hard can it get in terms of maintaining a living and as well as doing what you love?
Yeah, it can be really, really tough. I think a lot of us struggle with that on a daily basis. Mm. And a lot of us have to do all kinds of weird, random things to survive. I know people who drive Grab. I know people who do Lala Move, stuff like that. Oh, excuse me there.
The botanicals.
Lovely
it's the,
tea.
It's the ghosts of the flowers just popping up to say hello. It can be really tough. But I think what is always evident is that everyone always has a lot of passion about it.
Mm.
And they carry on even though like it's just so difficult and you go for like 7 auditions and get one show, you know? Or sometimes you don't even get any show.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to settle for all these little tiny gigs that pay really, really little. Mm. But, you know, you always kind of do it with the hope that, oh, someone's going to pick this up. Someone's going to snowball. My luck will snowball and everything will come true in the end.
Mm.
But it's a tough world out there.
Now, you see, that's very interesting as well, because I feel like most people that are listening to this probably have heard your name and seen you in quite big shows, because, I mean, you've been very fortunate to have some amazing shows, but yet we still talk like that
even after
all of those shows.
Absolutely.
Because it's not guaranteed, right?
It's
No matter what you've achieved, that next job isn't guaranteed.
That's one thing that I would tell anyone listening out there who's like starting out, and if you're looking at me and going like, oh, he must be rolling in a lot of money. It's not true. I'm still barely surviving, and this will be next year will be my 10th year in this industry.
All right.
And even then,
I'm uncle.
I've reached that age. I'm just old now. My back is hurting a little bit. Everything's hurting. My knee is gone. it's just
whose fault is that?
It's not all right.
You are never gonna let it go, are you?
Maybe after this podcast. This is like therapy.
This is therapy. This is getting it out.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, no. But honestly, just keep doing what you're doing. I guess I think is what I tell anyone. And it doesn't get any better or easier. No matter how long that you've been doing this, it's still a struggle. And it will always be one, I think. Mm. I think that's just part and parcel of doing theatre in Singapore.
Has there been a moment where you thought, I'm going to give it all up, I'm done?
Yeah, I mean, plenty. I mean, about twice a day. No, very often, it usually happens around this time of year when you realise, oh, I don't have a lot of work for next year. Maybe I should just quit. Mm-hmm. But everything always kind of sort of sorts itself out in the end. I think COVID was a really tough time for a lot of us. During COVID, I definitely wanted to just switch careers. I wanted to move to Phuket, open up a bar or something, you know, like just do a complete career switch. Or move to Tasmania, be a wildlife caretaker kind of thing. Because I love animals, and I've always wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, I'll just do that. Why am I stressing out about being a performer here when nobody really wants to watch anything? But of course, that was COVID mindset, you know, and it's thankfully kind of eased off on my troubles.
You are not necessarily, you've been in so many musicals, but your training wasn't musical theatre, and you just ended up in all of these musicals.
Yeah.
So actually going on to that, so like what was your background for training? How did you go from being a cow to the professional actor that we see today?
It was in junior college. It was in JC that I took drama as a subject, and I got some training for 2 years there. I learned ballet. I was trained in ballet.
Oh.
It's
got very good splits, I'll tell you.
I can do splits.
Well, maybe before.
I'm not as stable now, but I'm training to get back on it. So we did ballet there. We had like really good vocal coaches and acting teachers. All of whom were teaching at LaSalle as well.
Mm.
So I remember receiving all that, and I thought, well, this is basically like a condensed 2-year version of LaSalle. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And then I when I went to university, I did sociology and psychology.
Oh.
Yeah, so nothing related to the arts.
Is that the proper job?
Yeah, so exactly.
Is that the aim?
That was the proper job. That was the aim. And then I realized I'm just really bad at school. I remember the first day of psychology lecture, there's a huge cohort. I can't remember, but at least 1,000 of us.
My goodness.
huge
Which
cohort.
Uni?
NUS.
Right, oh.
Yeah, so in NUS, the guy walks in and he said, okay, out of all of you here, only about 4 or 5% will become psychologists. I was like, well, okay, should I go now? Should I walk out? And it's true because you have to be the top 1-2% of the cohort in order to get anywhere. Most of the time, the rest of us just go on to doing like social policy making or guidance counselors and stuff, like, or therapists, you know. Only a small handful become actual doctors of psychology. So it's a tough field. And so I realized I'm not really good at it. I did terribly throughout university.
What made you choose it in the first place?
Because I was always very fascinated with the human mind. I've always, from a very young age, like philosophy and all these sort of thinkers of the great, you know, time. I studied a lot of that even before going into uni. I was very interested in Freud and Carl Jung. That's about it, really. Freud and Carl Jung. I obsessed over those two for a long time. I read a lot of their books, and I thought I can do this. I'm smart enough. But turns out it's not. I'm not that smart.
But let's face it. Once we get into the rehearsal room, that's a lot of an actor's job is understanding the psychology.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
So I think it's maybe just a realigning of that interest characters.
Exactly. And I think it carries on to the work that I do now because I'm really still very fascinated with the mind. Mm-hmm. I'm very fascinated by different characters, different stories, different perspectives, and how they can all be melded into one mind, and how it's every time we are a certain thing, we are genuine about it, even though sometimes we feel like we are acting. But then acting is becoming because it's who we are, so therefore, even if we're always acting, we're always true. Therefore, is it acting at all? Or is it just constantly different versions of truth?
Oh, wow, very philosophical.
God, it's the fucking gin talking.
I need some more botanicals.
It's the botanicals.
So how do you use that to inform your process?
I think it's one thing that I've always sort of taken very seriously is the fact that your character can be anything. It can have many different facets, many different shades. And they're all colorful, you know. I think all different perspectives and different shades of personality are very colorful, and it's so important to have that because there is no one who is just one dimensional. You know, nobody is just a boring one shade of something. We're always a mix of everything, and each mix has its own sort of color that relates to that mix, and then they're all just intertwined. So I love filling out details when I do characters. I love creating very complex characters in my head, and every little tiny little thing has so much motivation behind it and so much sort of story and backstory and all the little quirks that a character has. I just love filling it out and just creating too much sometimes. But yeah.
Do you take enough risks with it?
I do. I think I always. I mean, you can ask TJ as a director.
as a director of Marco several times, I can tell you. Yeah. This boy is always creating.
Exactly. I'm always playing around because I get bored very easily. I hate doing the same thing over and over again, ironically. So I love keeping things fresh. I love throwing random new things into the mix, speaking in a different way, delivering a line in a different way, just for fun sometimes. And my brain is constantly making stuff up. It's constantly creating stuff as I'm performing different characters. And yeah, I just love to do that in a rehearsal room. That's why I need a director who will have the patience. Thank you, TJ. Patience to allow me to play and to do all these things. And then will tell me, okay, reel it back here, reel it back there, you know.
And has that always been successful, TJ?
No, so I tell you, okay, so I tell you with Marco, I've been on a journey with you, and I think I've told you this already to your face. But what I love about you in a rehearsal room is that you do play and you constantly play. Yeah. And that's really fun as a director. You know, having options is really important. And I really value actors that come in and offer things.
Yeah.
And you're also open to conversations afterwards and we'll say, no, that's not working. And here's why. And we have a conversation. But I do remember the very first show I worked on with you. It was You're in Town.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember coming into You're in Town as the vocal coach. That was over at Pandemonium. And after that show, I remembered going, I'm never working with this boy again. And the reason was on that show, I just felt like you were the Joker. But you had also a character that was very playful.
Yeah.
And you were very playful in that rehearsal room. And it was only by the time we got to Rainbow, was I think the next time we worked together. It was Rainbow.
It was Rainbow.
It was Rainbow. And then I just grew a completely different appreciation. We were also fellow actors on that stage. Yes. You had like three scenes.
Yeah.
He had his feet up the entire show.
I love that show so much.
Rainbow was when I first saw you. Yeah. I was really impressed because, I've said this to you before, your ability to turn an accent is incredible.
Well, thanks.
Like, it was proper British. Like that sort of Cockney aspect.
Right, yeah.
The Cockney twinge to it.
Yeah.
And your accents, how are?
I don't know, really. It's just one of those things that when I was very young, I was very obsessed with accents, of course. And I've realised I could do that. I could watch a TV show or a movie and sort of just take what I hear and replicate it with my mouth. And I thought, that's pretty simple. When I was really young, I spoke with a really thick American accent. And that was because it was like a defense mechanism. I was made fun of a lot. People bullied me a lot. And so I was othered. I was alienated.
Mm,
And so I said, all right, how can I further alienate myself? And it was speaking with an American accent.
Mm.
And I started lying to people because I thought I had this kid in my class. I remember his name was Keegan, right? When I was in primary four, his name was Keegan. Keegan was from Canada. And he came in and everybody loved Keegan because he spoke like this. And everyone was like, oh, he's so cool. He's like from America. So I started speaking like that and telling people that I was from America, which is an obvious lie. And then when the Harry Potter series came out, I became obsessed with the British accent. Every single British accent that was in that film, I was like, oh, why does that British accent sound different from that one? And what does she mean when she talks like this? Mm. Like, I need to know. I need to understand this, you know. I need to know it, you know. I need to have it, and so I did one by one, just slowly collecting accents through my life.
I must admit, I completely empathise with you with the othering.
Yeah.
I did the same thing at school.
Yeah.
Because I was othered, and I'm half Scottish. But when I was at school, my Scottish pride suddenly came through, and I practically acted like a full Scot.
All right.
And my mum actually sold me out. It was my mum who was the Scottish side of my family. It was my mum that sold me out in front of my friends. But it's interesting how that sort of othering and that want for acceptance can influence your personality and your socialization in that respect. Oh, I'm going very deep in academic here.
I think it's because I was exactly the same, but I think theater especially is a home for people that feel like that because it gives you a chance to explore something else in a safe space.
Yeah.
And I think theater often does attract those that are maybe feeling a little bit left out or needing to work through things in that, especially early in those kind of formative years. Theatre was my favorite time of the week. By the time I was 15, I was doing theatre every night of the week. I was working on different theatre companies by the time I was 15. So it's like that to me was my escape. And that's where I found my friends and my people and my family and people that accepted you for everything that you are and who you are.
That's one of my biggest life regrets, that I did not have that opportunity.
Mm. Speaking of that, so opportunity in Singapore, because I actually get quite frustrated when people say there's not the opportunity to do arts in Singapore, because there absolutely is.
Yeah.
It's there. I do believe that we can do better for different income levels, because I think it still can be quite expensive to train in the arts, but I think that's the same around the world. That's a worldwide problem. But how was your experience in gaining all of that kind of experience and training after, you know, you finding me becoming a character helps me, and then that goes to drama club and blah blah blah. How did that part of your life kind of develop?
I remember after I got out of school, I wasn't going to pursue acting, of course. And I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, that's a hobby. You know, I've been just trained very well by Asian parents to think, oh, this is not something that you should do as a main job. And so I thought, yeah, I'm just going to have fun with it. And at the first show that I did outside of school was Lord of the Flies with SRT's Young Ko. Now, I wasn't in Young Ko, but my senior from school had given me a call and said, look, I can't do this play. I'm dropping out. But do you want to try it out? Do you want to audition? So I went, and Dan Jenkins was directing that show. That was my first time working with and meeting Dan Jenkins. Then, after, you know, doing that, I realized, oh, well, I really love this. I'm just going to do this as a hobby. And so I kept doing that as a hobby. I worked with a lot of amateur theater companies and stuff that just paid an experience, you know, that kind of, and this was like in 2012, 2013. So it was still very acceptable to do shows for free. Mm-hmm. And so I did. Then I realized, oh, I kind of like this. I think I can kind of do this. I think I can kind of sustain myself if I do this regularly enough. And then in my final year of university, I did my first panto with Wild Rice. And that was by complete chance too, because a very close friend of mine, Ben King, was in the show, and he was like, oh, hey, Pam, the director, is looking for actors who can play instruments and act. Do you want to audition? So I said, oh, okay, sure, I'll give it a shot. And then Pam accepted me into the show, and I was so happy. I was like, yes, well, it's cool. It's my first Wild Rice panto, whoa. And then from there, I think Tracy and Adrian saw me, and then I was asked to audition for Rent. And then after I auditioned for Rent, they were like, hey, by the way, we've got another show as well. It's about a kid with severe autism. You want to try it out? And I went, oh, that's terrifying, but sure, I'll give it a go. So I auditioned for that, and I got Falling. And I remember getting Falling was in my last year of uni, and I was just about to graduate, you know, trying to get an internship somewhere. And then after I'd closed Falling, I thought, oh my! I think I can do this. I think I can actually do this as a living. I can do this properly, and if I get enough traction now, I can probably just keep doing shows. I can sustain myself, and so I did. And so I made the executive decision to say, "Well, screw this, screw school. I'm gonna just make it just the bare minimum to pass and to get my certificate, and then I'm gonna just throw myself into the industry." And that's what I did, and I just never looked back since.
So you were in your final year of university when you did your first performance of Falling.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
Because TJ very kindly took me to see Falling this year, your second round of Falling. And I have to say, Andrew, what a performance.
Thank you very much.
I was in your eyeline, and you saw me sobbing like a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
It was such a
boys cry
powerful.
Too.
It was such a powerful play, and not just you to Karen and to Dwayne as well. Yeah. It was such a powerful story. Mm.
I think it's so lovely that, you know, we do have these sort of stories being shown in theatre. Mm. You know, I think Pandemonium especially do always kind of champion that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always nice to do shows that are rooted in that kind of realness. You know, every time I get to do a show like that, I'm just so happy. Because most things are like, ha, sunshine and rainbows. And then you get stuff that's just hard hitting and it's like, ah, yes. Because as an actor, there's this duality there. There's this light and dark that is always constantly fighting. And I love to do comedy. I love to do the light stuff, but I also love to do the dark stuff. Mm. And I love it when those two mix. That's just my favorite kind of thing.
That is very interesting for me because I think most people see you as a comic actor.
Yeah.
But I do know that for you, actually, that depth is, you know, like, and even with comedy, I think one of the reasons you're such a good comedy actor is because you put that depth to that character. It's not just bare bones, you know. It's because I think good comedy is just as intense as a serious role, you know, because you can't play that comedy just on surface level, you know. So I think that's really interesting.
I'm going to admit something here, and I kind of alluded to this in the Dear Evan Hansen review, that I am the sunshine and rainbow kind of audience. I prefer those kind of performances, but TJ has dragged me out to, and a lot of them have been Pandemonium, in fact. Falling one, Tango, that was Pandemonium, was it not?
Oh yes, Tango.
And I would go in with a wall. I'm thinking, oh god, this is going to be too serious, so, you know, I like a laugh, I like a bit of frivolity and everything like that. And they've actually all been very, I mean, I was sobbing like I'm going to say a girl boy during Falling Tango as well, which was one of my first serious plays in Singapore. That was very empowering and very real. And I don't expect to watch reality when I go to the theatre, but when it's done so beautifully, it sticks in your memory.
Yes, it sticks in your memory.
Sticks in your
forever
memory.
And ever.
Okay, so for me, Marco, what is what's next for you? Like, what's the next 10 years of Andrew Marco?
Oh, wow. The next 10 years, well, hopefully, with more money in my bank account. no, but I'm at the point in my life now where next year will be my 10th year in this industry as an actor, and I'm thinking like I can't just be acting forever. I can't just be, you know, a puppet forever. I've got to do other things. I want to do other things. I want to try directing, and I've always been a writer as well. I've written a whole bunch of stupid stuff that I'd never really show anyone, but it's got so much material somewhere.
Sorry for interrupting. Why won't you show it? Well, you're willing to put yourself vulnerably as a person on the theatre, but you won't show people your writing.
No, because my writing is so, I'm so precious about it. I'm so precious about it because I think I'm the best writer in the world in my head. So if I show anyone my writing, I don't want you to tell me that this doesn't work. I'd be like, no, it's mine. It's my therapy. I shall continue writing this scene. And that's what I used to do. I used to, if I get frustrated or if I'm feeling frustrated with a friend, I would write a scene with two of us and us resolving the conflict.
I've done that on ChatGPT. Yeah,
it's fun. Yeah, because you read it through and you go like, oh, yeah. They wouldn't say that, but yeah, it's nice if they would. Yeah. It's therapy. Yeah. So hopefully more writing, more directing in the next couple of years for me. Probably more teaching as well, because that's where the money is.
Is there a dream role that you've never played that you hope to play one day?
Elder Cunningham, Book of Mormon. That's my number one. I would love to.
I'd
love to.
100% see you in that role.
Yeah. 100%. That would be amazing if I could do that. Hello. You know, that's just... It's my favorite musical, hands down.
Again, I've not seen it. I know its popularity, but I've not seen it.
Maybe we'll do that in London. We're going to London.
Yes, we are.
Oh, please,
maybe
please
we can watch
it.
That.
Yes.
We'll have a look.
Yeah, we
we'll
have two nights, don't we? Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Do that.
So I think for me, like everything you've just said, and I also want to, we've got a little bit of gossip just for this podcast, because I have a fact that most people don't know. Andrew Marco found his name in a very interesting way, because it's not actually Andrew Marco, and I've had permission to reveal this to the world.
Yes.
Okay, so Marco, please tell us the story.
So my real name is Mabel Lee. I'm kidding. No, I'm and most people don't know this, and that's fine. I don't really explain this to many people all the time. If you ask, I will tell. My full name is Andrew Mark Ong. Andrew Mark Ong, that's my full name. I grew up Catholic, so Mark is my middle name. And one of the first few shows that I did, I don't even remember what it was now. It was just some silly company. I love the company. But I was doing a show, and in the program booklet, I put my name as Andrew Mark Ong, but it was really long, and I didn't check the thing before it got sent to the printers, and I didn't realize that the NG had got cut off, and it just became Andrew Mark O. And then the reviewers after that called me Mark O. So I thought, well, that's all right. I guess I'll just be Marco. And the next show that I did, silly me, I was thinking to myself, I don't want to put my name as Andrew Mark Ong, because what if they recognize me from the last play and they think, who the hell is this? Doesn't he look like Andrew Marco? So I went, I'm just going to keep Andrew Marco. And that was in 2013, 14. And it's been 10 years of a lie.
Now we know, ladies and gentlemen, it is revealed.
Yes.
That's a lovely story. I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
You heard.
There's many an actor or performer whose stage name came from from weird situations. Yeah. So yeah, that's.
But
I like
at least
that.
It's my name is rooted in something real. It's reality. It's not yes. like I'm not 50 Cent or something, you know.
But I just love the story. It's great. It's yeah. wonderful. Ah. And you heard it here first, folks, on A Spoonful yeah. of Theatre podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, our drinks are empty, and they are. I think we have gotten everything out of you, yeah. Mr. Marco, yeah. that yes. we can get out of you in 40 minutes. But what's next for you?
Has
what
it
are
been
you up
40
to?
Minutes?
It oh, has wow. been 40 minutes. So, so what is not? What's next for you? What can we see you in?
Well, you can catch me in The Princess and the Pea. Obviously, I'm playing the pea.
But not and running. Not running.
No, not running. It's a slow pace.
Rolling.
That's P-E-E. So. It's about the entire play is a lovely little children's play about urinary tract infections. It's the
I'm sure SRT will love that you said that.
Oh, no, it's the classic tale of the princess and the pea told through the eyes of the pea and a prince and a princess, and I'm the prince. And that happens next week. We open okay. next Wednesday.
Fantastic.
Which is the 23rd, I think. Mm-hmm. And we run all the way till the end of November. We might be extending till the 1st of December.
Oh, fabulous. Nice.
Fantastic.
Good. Yeah.
Well, as always, it's always a pleasure, Marco.
It's always
and
a pleasure.
I
thank you.
I can't wait to see you in your next thing and also work together again many yeah. times in the future, I'm sure. And for Sam, I'm sure.
Oh, thank you for coming, darling. This has been absolutely... I'm a massive fan of yours. And I've enjoyed every performance I've seen of yours. So thank you very much for coming. Loving your work.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. I hope you guys enjoyed the... Ginka, Peruvian distilled gin, very small batch, handcrafted and distilled by Peru's first urban distillery, Berries Edition.
And on that, we will see you later. Get out of our studio! Bye! Marco has left the building.
Oh my god, my sides are split. I love that man.
Oh, me
I
too.
Absolutely love that man. He's so humble. Mm-hmm. He's so personable. I just enjoy being in his company, mm-hmm. both on and off stage. And I'm so grateful for him coming to join us today.
Absolutely. What a great first episode. And I hope, listeners, you enjoyed that just as much as we did. And for me, because, you know, I've directed him, I've worked alongside him, I've, you know, acted with
covered
him as well.
Him.
Covered for him, understudied for him many times. Did I mention that?
Now, did the therapy work, dear?
It did. I feel very settled. I feel like we've settled.
Are you going to let it go now, TJ?
Do you know what? Genuinely, I'm joking about it, but I got to do my dream role. Nobody should ever do their dream role with only 3 days practice and having to go on. But it was a really great experience.
I hope it does go into the annals of Singapore theatre history that a director covered, did the direction, vocal coaching, and covered three of the main roles.
And had to go on for two of them.
And yeah.
Yes. That was an experience. But enough about me. But what I'm really happy about with that interview was I think we really got to see who Marco is. And like you say, you know, he's a very genuine chap. And I think... he really cares about his craft.
Yes.
You know, because I think he does, you know, I think quite a lot of people see him as the Joker and they see that funny side of him. But he's somebody who takes his craft very seriously and does put a lot of detail and a lot of work into his work. And he does that through play. And, you know, actually, I talk about that all the time when I'm teaching and when I'm directing. Play is so important in theatre because that's how we find things out and that's how we get all of these things. So that came across, I think, in the interview really well.
I'm going to go one step further. Play is important in anything.
Absolutely.
In mental health.
I agree.
I think there's a lot of people out there that haven't played for a long time. Mm-hmm. And maybe a bit down in the dumps and, go and be frivolous, go and be silly.
Mm-hmm.
As you might find, that you have a talent for it.
Absolutely. I'm working in an industry for 10 years.
Yes. Do you know what? I'm still flabbergasted that he was in his final year of university when he did the first round mm-hmm. of Falling. I'm still absolutely flabbergasted by that.
Absolutely. It's very lovely. And I hope you enjoyed that, listeners. So to wrap up our episode every month, we are going to finish off with our hot sips, our show recommendations. So here we go.
Oh, there's a few things out there, TJ, isn't there? So there is. What do we have first?
First up, we have Checkpoint Theatre with their brand new show called Hard Mode. This is a show, a brand new original show written by Faith Ng, which explores the in-between between teenage and adulthood. And that's playing at the SOTA Drama Theatre from the 18th to the 26th of October. Tickets are on Sistic.
Now, we also have, as the lovely Marco told us, is The Princess and the Pea with SRT Little Company, and it's for 3 years old and above, directed by the wonderful Daniel Jenkins, and among the cast is Andrew Marco. It is on from the 23rd of October to the 30th of November, with hopefully an extension, as Marco divulged to us, at the Casey Art Centre, and tickets are available on Sistic.
Absolutely, and our friends over at Gateway Arts are also putting on a brand new show called 12 Going on 13, another journey of adolescence, written by Michelle Tan with an amazing local cast as well. That's on from the 27th of October to the 3rd of November over at Gateway Arts Black Box Theatre. Tickets also on Sistic.
And of course, we have to give it a mention. Pandemonium's Dear Evan Hansen. Mm-hmm. The reviews are out. Rave reviews. And it's going on now till the 10th of November at the Victoria Theatre with Sistic. Of course, if you want to know what we felt about it, you can go see it in our review. But it is wonderful. We wish the cast and the production team a wonderful show with that one. What else we got
Absolutely.
On TJ?
Absolutely. So all of those four. Actually, there's a lot of teenage and child stories going on this month. So if you want something a little bit different, Sightlines have got just the thing for you. This is called Red, An Artful Murder. Ooh. And Sightlines have been doing a lot of murder mysteries. And you kind of watch the show, get involved. If you get certain ticket prices, you get a drink as well, which is really good. So you actually get to solve the murder, interact with the cast. It's really interesting. This is on from the 30th of October to the 1st of December. And the location is secret to be revealed, which is very exciting. Ooh. It's a mystery before you even go. Hopefully it's not out in Malaysia and you have to take like 20 cabs. So we'll see when that location is revealed. But the location is, sorry, the tickets are over on Sistic. So go catch Red, An Artful Murder now. And that is our hot sips for the month.
Now, dear, my Peruvian gin-flavoured tea has gone cold, so I think we'll leave it there, shall we?
I think we should, and if you have made it this far in the podcast, thank you so much for supporting us, and that means that you probably enjoyed yourself, so please do shout about it, follow us on whatever podcast streaming service you've listened to this on, and also share a lovely story and tell your friends, because we want to make this podcast for everyone and support the local Singapore theatre scene.
But for that, it's for us to say cheerio, we'll be back soon.
And a hurrah from me.
And to anybody and everybody working in Singapore Theatre for the next month,
break a leg.